Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So what have we been discussing yesterday?
Hearing.
Hearing as a very important foundational principle for our spiritual life. We discussed many points yesterday. Do you remember some of the key points? Let's recapitulate. Some of the key points that we discussed yesterday. One by one, if you can just raise your hands and speak. Only one point each. Different people each time.
So physically sit in the class and hear the lecture. Instead of depending on technology or the internet. Hearing a class in association is very important.
That is very important. So physically sitting in the association of devotees is very important. And one should never hear through internet. Right?
When we are alone at home.
Yes, when we can't come for the physical association of devotees to hear, then we can hear by other means. But the preference should always be for hearing. Right, yes.
There's no difference between Shrutis and Smritis.
There is no difference really between Shrutis and Smritis. Yes, you are very philosophical young man. Yes, very good. Excellent. Yes.
Reading is also part of hearing.
Reading is also a type of hearing. Excellent. Why is that so?
Because from that as well we can pick up the... Well, it is Prabhupada's lectures that
yes,
we're reading.
Yes, Prabhupada
so
is speaking. Shukadeva Goswami is speaking in a sense, and we are reading. So we are actually hearing. Yes, what else?
Even if you fall asleep, you're still listening.
So at that time you weren't sleeping, right? Okay, so even if you're sleeping, still come and listen. But does that mean we should come here to sleep?
No.
We should come here to hear. Right? Yes.
When we hear, we should hear from bona fide authorities.
When we should hear from bona fide authorities. What does that mean?
Someone who comes from disciplic succession.
Someone who's there in the disciplic succession. And of course, one should hear from the spiritual master, one should also hear from more and more advanced devotees. Yes, that's also very important. What else did we hear? Yes.
We should hear very attentively.
We should hear very attentively. Excellent.
When we chant, we should hear what we chant.
We should chant and what we hear. Very good. Excellent.
Out of all services, hearing is the most important activity. And also by hearing, one gets proper consciousness when doing the other services, how to apply and what consciousness they need to do.
She's not talking, please. Not talking, okay? Hearing. So when we... what was the point?
The most important...
important devotional service is hearing. And no other service needs to be performed. Right?
It is the most important activity.
It is the most important. Of course, other services must also be done.
Yeah.
Yes? But this is the most important service, number one. And number two, that if you don't perform this most important service, either you will stop doing the other services or you will perform those services in the improper consciousness with the wrong attitude. Correct? Yes. Any other points? Yes.
Knowledge actually comes from hearing.
Knowledge actually comes from hearing. Excellent. Yes.
There is no hearing that in due course of time chanting this stuff.
Correct. When there is no hearing, then in due course of time even chanting will stop. Yes. New one each time. Someone who hasn't answered. Yes.
Even animals hear.
Even animals can hear attentively. And sometimes humans don't hear attentively. So we can take inspiration even from animals, correct? Any other points? Actually, you know, many years ago in one temple, I started this system. After every class, of course the community was small, we would sit together after the Bhagavatam class in a circle. And every single devotee would speak one point that he or she had heard in the class. And we went round and round in circles till everybody exhausted every ounce of their memory by what was spoken in the class. And everyone was amazed at how much they eventually thought they remembered. Initially, when you walk out of the class, you're blank. You just remember only a few things. But then you dredge and drill your memory, and then you start remembering things. So this is a practice. So when you hear, you should chant. When you hear and you chant, then you also remember. And we'll come to this point shortly. So therefore this idea of recapitulating what we've heard in the previous lecture is very useful, because we tend to remember that better, assimilate that better. What other points did we discuss? New people each time, yes.
Hearing is the first step in the God realization.
Very correct. Hearing is the first step in God realization. Yes. Somebody else?
It develops our faith in God. And
very correct.
Pure devotees don't hearing and chanting.
Yes. Hearing develops our faith in Krishna, in God, and also even in the stage of pure devotion, we do not stop hearing. It's not that hearing is just a stepping stone to achieve a goal. And then after we've achieved the goal of pure love of God, we give up hearing. It's not like that. Hearing about Krishna, like other forms of devotional service, is the means and also the end. Right? This is a very important point. There are some others who follow other philosophical paths, like those who want to merge into the impersonal Brahman and so on. They may also accept certain processes of bhakti, like chanting and so on. They may do kirtan, they may even chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But for them, this is only the means, not the end. They feel that once they've attained a certain stage of liberation, what they think is liberation, then they can give up all this. Then they don't need this. But that's not bhakti. Krishna consciousness means you continue. One time somebody asked Srila Prabhupada, why do you chant Hare Krishna? And Prabhupada's response was, so I can chant more Hare Krishna. So it's the means as well as the end. What other points do you remember from yesterday? Yes.
We should repeat what we've heard.
We should repeat what we've heard. Why is that important? First of all, to share what you've got, because you've heard something very useful when you hear from the scripture, and you want to share something that is good with others, definitely. We don't want to be misers and keep nice things only for ourselves. So we want to share it, so we help others in the process. And what else is the benefit of repeating what we heard? We understand better. We also get purified, double purification. Purification for hearing, purification by chanting. Right? So there's double purification. Any other points from yesterday? Yes. Sorry, yeah, go on.
Those who are hearing, they advance more rapidly.
That's right. Those who are hearing make more advancement in Krishna consciousness. They advance faster. Yes.
Scriptures are the word of God. So if you want to know about God, you should read scriptures.
Scriptures are the word of God. Therefore, if you want to know about God, you should hear the scriptures. So why can't we see God just like that?
We've not got the eyes to see.
We haven't got the eyes to see. So what kind of eyes do we need to see? Some special glasses or spectacles? What do we need?
We need to read the scriptures.
So how do you see God by reading the scriptures?
Because the scriptures are considered like a mother to us. If you want to know the Father.
Scriptures are considered like a mother, then you can understand who is the Father, that's God, yes. But specifically in this regard,
authorized.
You want to see God through
ears.
That's the important spiritual process. Our seeing is through the ears. Right? A very important point. Please remember this. So more important than seeing for us is hearing. The more you hear, the more you will be eligible to see. The more your vision will be purified to see. Srila Prabhupada explains that the more you hear, the contamination of the mind will be diminished. And the more that happens, the cleaner your heart becomes, and then you can actually see God at a certain point in time when you've developed enough spiritually. Okay, so there's many, many more points like this. We could actually spend the whole hour talking about what we talked yesterday, right? But let's go on. So Prahlad Maharaj speaks about the nine processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnam, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Mandanam, Dasyam, Satyam, Atmanirevanam, Iti Punsakuta Vishnam, Bhakti Chenava Lakshana. He said these nine types of activities are the nine limbs of devotional service. According to me, these nine limbs of devotional service actually constitute the highest form of learning or education for any human being. So many times people ask, what is this bhakti, what is this devotional service, what does it mean practically? So these are the nine things that it means. Starting with shravana, with hearing. Everything begins with hearing. Many of the verses that talk about devotional service, they often begin with shravana. And this is not a coincidence, because everything begins there. It is only by shravanam that you can do kirtanam, and then you can have smaranam, and you will have the understanding and the faith and the inspiration to do the other forms of devotional service. What to speak of atmanivedanam, complete surrender. Even other things like worshipping the deity. You will not know what the deity is and how to worship the deity unless you have some understanding, unless you've heard something about Krishna or about the deity. So again and again we see shravanam is given so much importance. Prabhupada also mentions it again and again in his lectures. Of all the processes of devotional service, hearing is fundamental. Hearing is most important. It is actually the beginning of yoga. There is no question of bhakti yoga without hearing. That's when the heart is completely purified of all contaminations. It is only when one hears that one becomes eligible to do kirtanam. Prabhupada says in one lecture that bhakti yoga means to control the mind and focus on Krishna. That's yoga in general, meditation in general. So how does one concentrate the mind? It is very hard for the mind to be concentrated on anything. The mind can be concentrated when it is locked on Krishna Katha. When you focus the mind on hearing about Krishna, the mind becomes concentrated and then purified. There are many, many instances of how great devotees perfected their lives by adopting each of these nine systems of devotional service. I think you all know that among the nine processes of devotional service, there are examples of devotees who perfected their lives by just accepting one of these. Shravanam, hearing. Who perfected his life by hearing? King Parikshit. Kirtanam, speaking. Shukadev Goswami. Smaranam, remembering. Prahlad Maharaj. Padasevanam, serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Lakshmi Devi. Archanam, worshipping the deity. Prithu Maharaj. Vandanam, offering prayers. Akrura. Dasyam, becoming a servant of the Lord.
Hanuman.
Hanuman. Sakhyam, becoming a friend of the Lord.
Arjuna.
Atma Nivedanam, self-surrender.
Krishna.
Bali Maharaj. And who was the one who did all nine?
Amrish
Maharaj. Very correct. So therefore, these devotional processes are so powerful that even if you accept even one of them, you can attain perfection. But naturally, it's not possible for us to do just one thing, realistically speaking, in this day and age. For example, can we do what Maharaj Parikshit did? Can we sit continuously for 7 days and seven nights just hearing, without food, without water? When Parikshit Maharaj was hearing from Shukadev Goswami, he began to glorify the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says this that your Srimad Bhagavatam is so nectarian, it's so wonderful, that it purifies all three kinds of people associated with it. Who are the three kinds of people associated with any discourse on Krishna?
Speaker.
The speaker.
And the one who asks the question.
The one who asks questions.
And the audience.
And the audience. And those who hear. So, Krishna Katha is purifying for all three categories of people, just as the Ganga, when she flows through the universe, she purifies three stages of the universe, the higher planets, the earthly planets, and the lower planets. Right? So the same way, all types of people are purified. Parikshit Maharaj also tells Shukadev Goswami, he says, my dear sage, generally, hunger and thirst are a source of great trouble for ordinary persons, including myself. But, because I am hearing the nectarian topics of Krishna from your lotus mouth, I do not feel the pangs of hunger and thirst and sleep and so on. And that is because the nature of Krishna Katha is so nectarian, it places one immediately on the transcendental platform. So this is the position. When one becomes habituated to hearing and one develops a taste for hearing, then one actually transcends the bodily platform. Even though the pangs of hunger, thirst and so on are there, but one doesn't notice them so much. Because one is getting a lot of nourishment, not through the mouth, but through the ears. So this is nectar. That nectar nourishes the soul and therefore nourishes the whole system, the body, mind, intelligence, everything. The sages at Naimisharanya address Sutta Goswami and they say, Vayantuna Vittrapyama Uttama Shloka Vikkale Yat Srimvatam Rasajnanam Svadu Svadu Pade Pade. They say, my dear Sutta Goswami, please do not think that we will be very tired of hearing your discourses on Krishna, that we may think we may get bored, sleepy or whatever. No. We are not tired. Vayantu na vitrapyama. Uttama shloka vikrame. By hearing the glories and the pastimes of Uttama shloka, Lord Krishna. Because these talks are so nectarian that at every step we are tasting more and more nectar. Svadu svadu pade pade. At every stop we are experiencing this nectar. So this is the situation of one who has developed taste. That is our aspiration, our hope. One day we also want to be in that position when we can speak like Parikshit Maharaj and we can speak these words like the sages at Naimisharanya. Please go on speaking with our heart, I mean not just with our mouth, with our heart, and then not really worry about when we have to go back home and when prasadam time is and when will the speaker finish. When will that day come? That is what we have to hanker for. When we will also think like Rupa Goswami, like Prithu Maharaj, like Parikshit Maharaj. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also demonstrated the way of eager listening and hearing. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami used to recite the Srimad Bhagavatam very sweetly. He would recite in different melodies. He would take a verse and recite it differently. It was so charming to hear Raghunath Das Goswami chanting that many devotees would gather there to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would also come there and listen. And it is said that he heard the pastimes of Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, consecutively 108 times. Right? When we hear one, once we say, okay, so now the next time we hear it, oh, I've heard that. I don't want to hear it again. I want to hear something new. One time Srila Prabhupada said, your disease is you always want something new. Because somebody was asking for a solution to some problem. He said, the problems are old, the solutions are also old. You know, the problems haven't changed. It's only some external form of the problem has changed. Essentially, the problems are the same. But we think now we have this model, this problem, we have that problem. And the solutions are also the same. So he said, just follow the same procedure that I have taught. Just go on chanting, go on hearing, go to the association of devotees. I think you must take care of her and maybe you can see, yes? You may need to, I think, take her, yes? So, where was I?
Problems.
So all the problems are the same old problems as before. So the solutions are also the same. The solutions are to do your Krishna consciousness. Don't look for new solutions all the time. Just focus on the fundamentals. Hearing, chanting, that should go on. Right? And all our problems will be solved. In Sanskrit there is an expression. It's called Ram Ban Upai. You know, Ram Bar means the arrow of Lord Ramachandra. Upai means a solution. So when you want a perfect solution, then you say Ram Bar Upai. Because it never fails. Lord Ramachandra's arrow never fails. It always hits the target. And number two is always effective. It always works. So similarly, Krishna consciousness, especially the hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord and the holy names, will always work. So we should continue that. So in any case, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard so many times, 108 times continuously. So it's a lesson to us that these are transcendental pastimes. We don't get bored. Mahaprabhu didn't get bored. Oh, I've heard this one before, twice, thrice, but 108 times? Yes. That's what hearing is all about. In the Nectar of Devotion also, Srila Rupa Goswami has given many nice descriptions about Shravanam, or about the hearing process. He quotes from the Garuda Purana an interesting analogy about a person who has been bitten by a snake. Now, those of you who are living here in England and have never lived in India or maybe in rural areas, you don't know about snake bites. I don't think you worry much about snakes here. But in India and the villages and maybe in Africa and maybe a few other places, snake bite is something that's a reality of life in the villages, especially when you are a farmer. So when you're bitten by a snake, then you don't die immediately, especially if the snake is poisonous. If it's not poisonous, it doesn't matter. Not all snakes are poisonous. Actually, we get afraid when we see a snake. Most snakes are harmless. They're actually beneficial. It's only a few varieties of snakes that are poisonous. So even when the poisonous snakes bite you, you don't die immediately. You first become unconscious. And after that you may die if you're not treated. So the analogy is that just as a person who has been bitten by a poisonous snake, who's had snake bite, and has gone into a comatose condition, into unconscious condition, can be revived by herbs or by chanting mantras. Similarly, a person who is spiritually unconscious or spiritually comatose, being bitten by the snake of the illusory energy of the Lord, of Maya, can be revived from that unconscious condition by the chanting and the hearing of the Katha of Krishna, the holy names of the Lord, in the pastimes and so on. Prabhupada also quoted this verse from Chanakya Pandit. Sarpaha kruraha, khalaha kruraha, sarpaha kruraha. He said, sarpaha kruraha. Sarpaha means a snake. Kruraha means very cruel, very envious. So a snake is generally very cruel and envious. A snake is one type of living entity who bites you without any reason. Most animals will attack you only if they feel threatened or if they are hungry or something like that. They have a reason. But a snake is a kind of living entity that doesn't need a reason. It'll simply bite you for no reason at all. So it's considered a very envious creature. So therefore Chanakya says, sarpa kruraha. So a snake is cruel. But there's also a person who can be very envious, a human being. Kalaha krura. So an envious man can also be very cruel. Sarpat krurataha kalaha. The envious man can be even more dangerous and cruel than a snake. Why? Then he goes on to say, mantraushadhi vashah sarpaha. That the sarpa or the snake can be controlled, vashaha, by mantra and aushadhi. Aushadhi means herbs. Mantra means a mantra, by sound, transcendental sound vibration. But khalaha kena nivaryate. But for an envious man, there is no cure. So an envious human being is more dangerous than even a snake. So Srila Prabhupada quoted this sometimes to talk about the danger of envious people in this world. But in the course of that analogy, he did talk about snakes and snake bites. Srila Prabhupada knew practically everything about everything. He would always talk knowledgeably on so many subjects. So let's talk a little bit about snakes, okay? Because the topic is relevant to us. So Prabhupada began to narrate that he had a friend called Dr. Ghosh who recalled an incident when he was in the medical college in Lucknow. And in their compound, suddenly some snakes came out of nowhere and they bit two or three people and two students died. And then, you know, there was all panic everywhere. And finally, some snake charmer was called. Some of you haven't seen snake charmers, but the stereotyped vision of India is you have a yogi on a carpet flying or you have a snake charmer, something like that. Right? So anyway, snake charmers were there for real in the old days. Nowadays, it's the diminishing breed, but you will find a few anyway. So this snake charmer came and he gathered those poisonous snakes and took them away. And now this was a medical college with all sorts of doctors and so on and so forth. And they couldn't cure these patients. But this man just came and took away the snakes. So then these people were very skeptical. So they all went there, especially the students and one or two of the lecturers. And they said, what is it you can do? What is it you have done? They were skeptical and they tried to mock him. So he said, you see, I control them by mantra. You people don't have that science yet. But I control them by mantra. And then he, because he saw that they were mocking him, so he opened the box
and he had a whole lot of snakes that slithered out. And these students panicked and they started running all over the courtyard. But they said, don't worry, so long as I'm there, these snakes will not harm you. Then he said, oh, you're saying that because the snakes are not poisonous. So he said, no. He went up to a snake, opened the lips and said, here, you can see these poisonous fangs? These are poisonous snakes. They have poison inside. But because I'm controlling them by mantras, they're not biting you. So in this way, he demonstrated how mantras can control snakes. It's very important. So if a person is bitten by snake bite, then by chanting mantras, you can actually relieve that person of the poison. And I had read these things many times over the years, but I also saw this with my, as I say, to use a cliche, my own eyes. When I went, I go to villages often in India, and in the state of Uttar Pradesh, there is one village where I go. I used to go once in 6 months to a year. I haven't gone for a few years now. And in the village, it's a very simple, typical Indian village. Poor people, simple housing. And I used to go there and speak. We had hundreds of villagers coming there. They were very faithful, simple people. And they used to put me up in one Hanuman temple. And then there was one small room there, very simple dwelling. So I would live there inside for those 2 days that I was there. So the first night I came there, at night there was all sorts of commotion going on outside, shouting and screaming. And I woke up, you know, wondering what on earth is happening. I opened the door and I saw the villagers had come in and they were carrying a lady who was screaming in pain. And I said, what happened? And I asked somebody, she says, she's got a snake bite. And they're bringing her here. So why are they bringing her? For Hanuman's blessings. He said, yes, of course. But our snake expert will be coming shortly. And sure enough, that man came. And he had some sticks and he was beating over the sticks and then he was chanting these mantras furiously. Now she came in howling with pain. And within 15 minutes, I'm not exaggerating, she walked out. So I was thinking wrong here. I don't think it's... How can this be? Right? And that was the season of the harvesting. So that's when they go into the fields, when the crops are high, you can't see the snakes who are in the field. So the snakes sometimes come and bite. So I said, no, this can't be. It's just too much. Of course, I knew that this was possible because I'd read it. I'd heard about it in the scriptures and Prabhupada said it so many times. And I said, let me wait. And sure enough, there were several cases that came that night. And one lady came and I asked, but what about the doctors? Can't they? No, her husband is a doctor. Of course, maybe they didn't have a venom. Now they have anti-snake venom and all that available, which she immediately had to inject. So that this person cured her as well. She was brought in on a stretcher, again howling with pain. I think she was bitten by a scorpion perhaps or something. And then, funnily enough, and you really find this funny, then I heard him, this man, talking furiously on a mobile phone. Then I asked somebody, what's going on? He said, there's somebody in Bihar, it's another state, who he's curing her by mobile phone. I said, really? So anyway, I saw this with my own eyes. Yes? So you see, what's said in the scriptures is not really false. It's just that these days we don't see all these things. And because we have no experience of this, we mock all the people who say this. Actually, I sat next to this person and tried to understand what mantras he was chanting, but his pronunciation wasn't so good. And I couldn't quite figure out. I could get only a few words. It was some prayer to Durga or Kali Chandi. Something he was chanting. Anyway, that's not our concern. We're not really into healing people from snake bites. But we are into healing people from the snake bite of Maya. So, therefore the Garuda Purana Shloka says that just as a person who is bitten by a snake can be revived by mantras, Similarly, when we are bitten, we are unconscious from a spiritual point of view, we are dead from a spiritual point of view, we can be revived by the mantra or the sound vibration of Krishna Katha and Krishna Naam, the name of Krishna and the messages and pastimes of Krishna. So being unconscious from a spiritual point of view means that we have forgotten our spiritual identity. We have forgotten our relationship with God. We have forgotten our real duty in life. And therefore we need to be reminded of that. Just like a person who is fast asleep or unconscious is unaware of his or her own identity. That person doesn't know who he or she is, what relationships are there with others in this world. They don't have no idea. But when they wake up, they realize, oh, my name is such and such, and I have this wife or husband or son or daughter or whatever. So similarly, when we hear about Krishna, then gradually our constitutional position, we are reinstated in our constitutional position just by the process of hearing. This is so powerful. So we mustn't underestimate the process. So the reason I gave a graphic description of the snakes is because it will help you to remember. It will help you to remember the potency of hearing. Yes?
When I was in Orissa,
yes,
I met some people and they had a mantra
mm-hmm.
for the snake bite.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them, well, how does it work? And they translated for me. And they said it was because they were initiated. There was an initiation, they had a guru, and they did some pujas. And it's because of the initiation, the mantra. They said if you chant the mantra,
it won't work.
You have to be initiated.
That's right. Actually, this man who was curing them of snake bites was a young man. And then the local villagers informed me that his father was the one who was doing it for many decades. Now he's too old to do it, so the tradition is passed on to his son. So obviously there's some sort of system of transmission, maybe an initiation ceremony or whatever it is. But they didn't look like particularly spiritual people or anything. But somehow this, you know, knowledge or whatever was passing down through the So now we can see everybody, the snake bite of Maya. Maya is all over. Everybody being bitten by the snake of Maya. So the many picturesque analogies about Maya, yes? Maya is like a snake. Or Mahaprabhu said, Mahaprabhu or Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago. What does he say? Who knows that first song, first verse? Kota Nidra, yes. Kota Nidra Jao Maya Pishachira Kole. Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago, Gauranga Bole means Lord Gauranga is saying, O Jivas, O souls, O sleeping souls, wake up, wake up. You are sleeping in the lap of the witch called Maya. Actually, Maya Devi is actually a pure devotee of the Lord. But she gets called all sorts of names. Yes? Witch, snake, right? All sorts of things. See, she has to suffer so much infamy, so much blasphemy, but all she is doing her service to Krishna. But of course, so we respect Maya as an energy of Krishna, but in her, when she does her official duties, then we are very careful of her, then she is very strong. See, even if you are playing with a snake and you are a snake charmer, but if you are careless, you can still get bitten by the snake. Yes? So when we deal with Maya also, we have to be very, very careful. So this is an interesting verse from the Garuda Puran, which Rupa Goswami quotes in the Nectar of Devotion, when he's describing the importance of Shravanam, or Kirtan, or hearing. There are many, many verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam which explain the glories of hearing. Yesterday we spoke about one verse, which was Satam Prasannam Mamavirya Samvita, which is spoken by Kapiladeva.
There are also one or two other verses which I'd like to discuss very briefly, which are very important for us. I also talked about the Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam verse. And another famous verse which is spoken by Parikshit Maharaj is Nivritta Tarshay Rupgiyamana Bhavoshada Shrapta Mano Virama Ka Uttama Shloka Gunanuvada Puman Virajeta Vina Pashukna. King Parikshit speaks to Shukadeva Goswami and says, my dear sage, it's really surprising that there are some people who don't want to hear about Krishna. And surely it's only those who are hard-hearted, cruel people, animal killers, who will not actually hear about Krishna. Why is it so surprising that some people don't hear about Krishna? He says, because Krishna Katha is so wonderful. And especially, it is of course appreciated by those who are relieved of the thirst for material enjoyment. Nivritta Tarshaya. So especially those who have no interest in material life relish this Krishna Katha. Nivritta Tarshaya Rupagiya Mana. And it comes in the disciplic succession. Bhava Aushadash Shrotra Manobhirama. So Bhava is another word for this material world. So Bhava is this material existence. Sometimes the world is called Bhava Sindhu, Bhava Sagar, Bhavam Buddhi, like that. The ocean of material existence. So this is the Bhava Aushadhi. It is the perfect medicine. These mantras, these sound vibrations are the perfect remedies for the disease of material existence. Now speaking of diseases and medicines, which do you think is the most dangerous disease? What is the main disease you are suffering from? Is it the flu or HIV?
Lust.
It's called Bhava Roga, the disease of material existence, wherein we are forgetful of Krishna and our relationship with Him. So this is a perfect medicine for all sorts of remedies, for all sorts of illnesses. No animal testing, no nothing. Yes? Pure medicine, natural, spiritual. And when you recite it, Bhavaushadim Shrotra Manaha Abhirama. To the mind and to the ears, it is very pleasing, Abhirama. Ka uttama shloka gunanuvada. So who is that person who would not like to hear this? Puman virajeta vina pashupna. Except only a pashupna. Only a person who is a killer of animals will not hear Krishna Katha. Also elsewhere, Brahma speaks to Lord Krishna. And he while glorifying Krishna, he says, Jnane prayasam utapasya namanti eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadiya vartam sthane sthita shrutikatam tanuvan manopir ye prayaso jita chito yasitaisti laukyam. He says, my dear Krishna, there are some people who accept the path of mental speculation to understand you, but they should give it up. If somebody gives up this process of trying to understand you by mental speculation, jnane prayasam udapasya namanti eva jivanti sanmukharitam bhavadevatam sthane sthita. Sthane sthita means that he continues in his particular position. Whether one is a grihastha, one is a brahmachari, one may continue, no problem, with your external position. Have an honest livelihood. You don't have to be greedy. Don't be overly passionate about acquiring the things of this world. Just continue on doing your respective prescribed duties in the material world. But what should you do? Jivanti, as you live, sanmukharitam, from the mouths of saintly persons, Bhavadiya Vartam, one hears your glories, O Krishna. So if a person does that, what happens? He says one will actually conquer you who are unconquerable. Another name for Krishna is Ajita. Ajita means one who is not conquered. But one can conquer Ajita by the process of hearing and chanting. So this verse is very important for us. Yane prayasam tapasya namanti eva jivanti sanmukhari jivanti bhavadiya vartam sthane sthita shruti katam tadvan manopam. And as one is situated in one's position, tanu van manah, with one's body, with one's mind, and with one's words, one should offer obeisances to Krishna. Then one can actually conquer Krishna. So imagine, sitting here, in a satsang, you can just sit and hear and conquer Krishna. Conquer God. So devotional service is so great that you can become greater than the greatest. Prabhupada said there are some people who are foolish enough to want to become God. They want to be equal to God. So they try to merge into the impersonal Brahman. But that can of course never happen. And wanting to become God is a last snare of Maya, Srila Prabhupada says. But devotional service is no so nice, he said, you can actually become greater than God. You can conquer God, like Mother Yashoda did. She became more powerful than Krishna. She bound Krishna by the ropes of her love. The gopas and gopis become more powerful than Krishna. Krishna becomes like a puppet in their hands. Of course, it must be mentioned that devotees don't perform devotional service with that calculation. They don't serve Krishna so that they can become more powerful than Krishna. But Krishna becomes so obliged with that devotional service that he actually submits himself to them and becomes controlled by them, or rather by their love. This is the beauty of Krishna consciousness. And all this is possible just by hearing. One Acharya was mentioning, has spoken, that for Bhakti Devi, the goddess of devotion, Bhakti, she enters into the heart of anybody who is sitting and hearing Krishna Katha. Right? That's simple enough. So Bhakti Devi enters within the heart. But here's the catch. Once she enters inside, then she looks around. What's here? And if she sees many, many other things, she says, oh, it's not a nice place for me, and she leaves. Unless you keep hearing. So the way to keep Bhakti Devi in the heart is to keep hearing about Krishna. And as you keep hearing, then Bhakti says, okay, there's more hearing, more Krishna, so I'll stick. But if there are other things going on in the heart, then Bhakti Devi says, oh, this is not a nice place for me to stay. Let me go away from here. In the Bhagavad Mahatmya, I don't want to go into great details into that. There are various descriptions of different types of hearers and listeners. But before we come to that, I just want to talk about compatible and incompatible combinations of speakers and hearers and listeners. You know, there are two types, compatible hearers, compatible matches, and incompatible. When we talk of incompatible matches, the speaker is very materialistic. He's speaking about Krishna, but he's materialistic. He wants money, he wants, you know, some name and fame, or he, whatever it is. He has some material benefits, desires to fulfill. But the audience is very pure-hearted, like all of you. They want only Krishna. That's an incompatible combination. Because both end up getting dissatisfied. The speaker thinks, oh, what an audience, I only want Krishna. They can't fulfill my material desires.
And the audience thinks, oh, what a speaker. We want Krishna. He's talking about all the material benefits we can get by doing devotional service. So both are unhappy. So therefore it's incompatible. The other incompatible combination is, when the speaker is pure-hearted, he's speaking only about Krishna, wants to encourage only devotional service, and the listeners are not interested. The listeners want some material benefit. And the speaker gets fed up. He says, oh, what's the use of speaking to such an audience? Then the listeners are also fed up. He's only talking Krishna. We want something to help our business and our family life. And he's not saying anything about that. So again, both become dissatisfied. Right? So these are the two types of incompatible combinations of speakers and listeners. Then there are the two types of compatible combinations. One is in which the speaker is materialistic and the listeners are also materialistic. So both make a good pair. You scratch my back, I scratch your back. Come on, I can tell you many good ways to make material progress. You want more money, you want a name and fame, you want progress in your business or whatever, okay. You chant these mantras, you hear this part of this shastra, you do this yajna, and you get money. So they are happy. But in return, you have to give me this donation. You have to do this for me. So they happily do that. So then both are happy. The speaker is happy, the listeners are happy. Of course, they're not actually happy. Because you cannot be happy when you have material desires, right? But at least it's compatible. But the perfect combination is when you have a pure devotee who speaks with no trace of material desire and pure devotees who hear, who also don't want anything material from the discourse or from the kirtan. So this is the perfect combination. Have you read this book, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers?
Yes.
Yes. The one devotee who is a Peace Corps worker from America went to India. He met Prabhupada and asked him so many questions. Of course, when he met Srila Prabhupada, he wasn't a pure devotee since he didn't know much about Krishna. But the questions he asked were very sincerely motivated. And they were good questions, relevant questions. In the purport to the verse Tatvati Pranipatina Pariprasnina Sevaya in the Bhagavad Gita, which talks about the importance of accepting a bona fide spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada mentions that one must inquire humbly and submissively from the spiritual master. Inquiries constitute a very important part of the process of surrendering to a spiritual master. At the same time, Prabhupada clarifies, the inquiries cannot be absurd and neither should we accept blindly. Just because it's said anything and everything we accept. No, we have to use our intelligence. At the same time, we shouldn't ask absurd questions. We shouldn't ask questions for the sake of asking or for the sake of showing how learned we are or for simply trying to point out mistakes in the speaker or for challenging him, or for some such reason. Questions should be asked for increasing the rasa, the taste of the discussion that's going on. That will enhance the sweetness of the discussion. Or for clarifying doubts that we may have. But when the questions are genuine and presented in the proper humble way, then that discussion becomes even more relishable. So in any case, questioning has to be there. When one questions, then the answers come. So Prabhupada explains that one must submissively question. So as the process of hearing goes on, one asks questions, one receives the answers, the hearing process continues on and on. And the purification takes place. Coming back to
the incompatible and compatible combinations. So, perfect questions, perfect answers, we have Parikshit Maharaj, we have Shukadev Goswami. Perfect combination. Can you give any such perfect combinations one by one, different answers?
Krishna and Arjuna.
Krishna and Arjuna. Perfect questions, perfect answers.
Sutta Goswami and the sages in
Nandisharanya. Sutta Goswami and the sages at Nandisharanya.
Maitreya and Vidura.
Maitreya Muni and Vidura. Who else?
Bhishma Dev and Yudhishthira Maharaj.
Bhishma Dev and Yudhishthira Maharaj. Okay, who else?
Krishna and
Uddhava.
Narada
and Vyasadev.
Sri Rama and Anjaneya.
Sri Rama and Anjaneya and Hanuman. Okay, alright. Who else? From Srimad Bhagavatam?
Kapil
Dev. That's right, Kapil Dev and Mother Devahuti. Who else? Come on, think. Srimad Bhagavatam.
Vasudeva and Narada Muni?
That was said. Narada Muni and Vasudeva. Kunti and Krishna, okay.
Narada Muni and Valmiki.
Narada Muni and Valmiki in the Ramayana, alright. What about Vyasadev and who was his disciple?
Shukadev.
Narada, who was Brahma's disciple?
Narada, first and father.
What about the Lord and Brahma? Perfect questions, perfect answers. Brahma and
Narada.
Perfect questions, perfect answers. Narada Muni and Vyasadev. Perfect questions, perfect answers. Vyasadev and Shukadev. Perfect questions, perfect answers. Yes? Who else? That's the one.
Shukadev and Parikshit.
What about King Nimi and the nine Yogendras in the 11th canto? So if you see, our whole process is based on questions and answers and hearing. So great devotees ask the questions, because you have to be a devotee to ask the right questions. Otherwise you don't know what to ask. Otherwise you end up asking all sorts of silly questions. Of course, in an audience of people, we leave it open. We don't restrict people to ask questions. Whatever they feel like, even if it's a silly question, if it's bothering you, ask. If it's connected to the topic, of course. But generally, if you look at the questions that are asked by Parikshit Maharaj, you really need to be a very knowledgeable person to ask questions like that. You have to know what questions to ask. And then the sages, they become very happy to answer the questions. When the sages ask Sutta Goswami, they ask Sutta Goswami the questions, then what did Sutta Goswami reply? What did he say?
Munayah
sadhu prishtoham bhavadbhe lokamangalam yatkata krishna samprashno yenatma supasidati. My dear sages, you've asked me such a wonderful question. Sadhu, sadhu, all glory is wonderful, good, good. In modern day you could say, or in English, bravo, bravo, or yay, yay, whatever you say in English, yes? To when you want to applaud somebody, says, yes, yes, very nice, very nice. Munayaha, O Munis, O sages, sadhu prishtaha aham. You ask me very good questions. Why? Bhavadbhir lokamangala, because they relate to the welfare and auspiciousness of the entire world. Why are your questions auspicious for the whole world? Yat krita krishna saprashna, because they are connected with Krishna. Yayatma suprasidati, by which one's very soul becomes purified and satisfied. So this is the perfect combination of listeners and hearers. So the whole process is based on these three categories of people: speaker, listener, inquirer. Of course, you don't have to compulsorily ask questions. You don't have to force yourself to ask questions if you don't have any. Just sitting and hearing, you complete the process. In the Bhagavad Mahatma, again, I won't go into detail in that. There are four categories of superior listeners and four categories of inferior listeners, and they are compared to different types of living beings like birds and animals and fish and so on with different characteristics. But among the superior listeners are some who, like a parrot, simply hear attentively and go and repeat. Or you have another who, like a fish, just stare at the speaker and glance. They just, you know, fish stares and just absorb everything the speaker is saying. Then you have another who will never go outside. They will only hear Krishna's books. They will only read Krishna's pastime. They will not study anything else. There are others like the swans who will take a mixture of milk and water and extract the milk. So they'll go everywhere in the world, pursue different things, but they'll take Krishna and extract him and topics of Krishna from wherever they see. So these are the superior type of listeners. I'm describing only briefly. But there are also some unfavorable listeners. One is like a wolf. You know, wolves make all sorts of noises. So there are some listeners who make all sorts of noises in the class, when the lectures are going on. Sometimes they yawn loudly. Does it happen? Some people yawn loudly, you know, and it creates a disturbance. Everybody looks around, who's there? Yes. Or somebody snores in the class. Yes, very well. Okay. And now, the modern equivalent of the wolf is when the mobile phone rings. So your extension rings. Start ringing. So, therefore, that's the inferior listener who comes into the class and doesn't switch off the mobile phone, the phone rings. So we have to keep in tune with the times and see. The idea being that when we come to the association of devotees, we are come with only one purpose, to hear. And also, of course, hearing from the spiritual master, hearing from the acharyas is very important. So I think we'll stop here now because we'll leave some scope for questions and comments. Jagannath Mahaprabhu, do you have any comments?
No.
Jagannath Mahaprabhu likes to hear. He has great taste for hearing Krishna Katha. Any questions? Yes.
There's something which is bothering me for a while. Now, I just want to ask, you mentioned that some people who are in Krishna consciousness, some people who don't like to listen to Krishna katha could be animal killers, and that's what the category is. Do you get?
That's what Parikshit Maharaj says.
Okay. So, what happens if somebody is in Krishna consciousness? And he follows all the path and everything, but he's a butcher because he has to do it by profession, he has no choice. Now, would you compare him to Arjuna in the battlefield, who has to kill because killing is being a soldier and killing is his profession?
Okay, so the question is that what if a butcher comes to become a devotee?
Yes,
he's doing his profession after all. And how is his situation different from that of Arjuna, who had to kill people in the battlefield because that was his profession as a warrior?
That's right.
Now, of course, there's a gulf of difference between the two. For one, Arjuna was killing in a war of religion, a war of dharma, a war for justice, a war for virtue, under the personal instructions of Krishna himself. He wasn't fighting whimsically for his own selfish purposes. In fact, he wanted to opt out, but Krishna told him, no, you have to fight. So therefore, when we follow Krishna's instruction, that is perfect. There is no flaw in that. On the other hand, the butcher is not acting according to Krishna's instructions. He is not killing for dharma. He is killing simply for sense gratification of so many people who want to eat the meat.
What happens if that's the only profession he's called?
Okay, so what happens?
Other way of
thinking. What happens if that is the only profession he's got? Well, that's not the only profession available in the world. So if he becomes a devotee, there are always opportunities for accepting other professions. And that is entirely possible. And there are many devotees who can do substantial changes in their profession. What to speak of a butcher? I'll give you the real example of a person I know very well. Who, when he first came to the temple, he heard some lectures and he got an understanding. He had never before heard any Krishna conscious lectures. He was pious by nature. He got some understanding of the philosophy in the first 2 or 3 days. Then after some time he came to meet me. And then he said, in the course of the talk, that you see, I'm a new person here, but I like it. I like the talks and everything, the lectures. From what I've heard so far in these few lectures, I have some understanding of what's right and what's wrong. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong. I have a poultry business. I make poultry feed. And in the fact that I sell it to farmers who are poultry farmers, who then feed it to their hens and chickens, and they sell it for slaughter, obviously. So I think it's not quite the right thing I'm doing, isn't it? Because eventually I'm selling my produce to those who are actually feeding them and then selling them to the slaughterhouse. So I'm also somewhat implicated, isn't it? So I thought about it. Now this man was quite wealthy, and his factory was big. Invested a huge amount of money in that factory over the years, and that was his only business. So I was thinking of what to do. Here's a man who's come new, and if I tell him yes, that what you're doing is wrong, then you know what does he do for a livelihood? At the same time, I can't speak a falsehood. So I just said yes, it's not right. That's all. I didn't say anything more than that. He said thank you and left. Next week he comes to me, 2 days later, and says, I've closed down my factory. I said, what? He said, yes, I've closed down my factory because I realized it's sinful. So I said, what about your livelihood? You've got so many people employed, and you've got your money, your family, or what was going to happen? He said, I've thought about it in these last 2-3 days. I've done some research and I'm continuing to do some research. So then he came up with another business for which he uses the same machinery, just with some slight modification, some cattle fodder, for not for slaughter, but for milk and so on, because there we don't sell so much the cattle. So then he turned the whole thing around, he changed his business to that of cattle feeds. And then, after some years elapsed, he took that bold decision. I never asked him to, although I hinted by saying, no, your business is not right. And he took such a major step in his business. And now, he told me, he is getting 10 times the profit that he used to get in his earlier business. Initially it was double, then 4 times, now it's 10 times. Business, because he had faith and he had courage of conviction, and even as a new devotee he took such a bold step because he realized it was a sinful activity. Stop and just see if Krishna recognized that sacrifice and gave him so much. He said, I don't know what to do with the money. So now he's giving to Krishna. Mm-hmm. That's the. He said, I don't need that much. So whatever extra is there is for Krishna. They changed professions. So what about a butcher? A butcher's even, this was not even as direct as a butcher's job is. So a butcher can easily find another profession. There's so many options available. He doesn't have to continue with that.
So what happens, Robert, is if he's got a big family to feed and he can't find another job?
I'm sure he can find another job if he tries.
Profession. He's got a belief in Krishna, he's in Krishna consciousness, he's got devotion, he does everything. But he has no choice. I'm talking about in that field.
There is always a choice. You can't say there is no choice. There are other jobs available too. There are other vocations and professions you can follow. In a sense, one must also say that in this day and age, it is very hard to find a profession that is completely untouched by sin. In Kali Yuga, practically every profession is touched by sin. Right? Practically every profession.
So many forms.
Somehow or the other, if you really examine it, everything in life that you use, all the modern things that you use, including your computer or your toothpaste or whatever you use, will have some products of the animal. Yeah. Something which is sinful. It's very hard to separate. But that said, something as blatant as killing, directly killing an animal, that's something that's a definite no-no. He can easily find another job, or even if it's not easy, with some difficulty, he can find another job. But he should do that. Because if you continue killing animals and eating meat, your taste in Krishna cannot develop. You will not get taste in hearing about Krishna.
Impossible.
No, I mean, if he's not eating the meat, he's not doing anything, he's just selling it.
He's not doing anything, only cook, only killing?
What happens if he's just buying them and not killing them, buying them from the
buying is also killing. Eating is also killing. Because if you're not eating, if nobody eats, nobody will kill you. It's because there are people who want to eat, there are people who then kill, and then who sell, and who transport, and so on. Right? Yes.
Thank you for being with us, Maharaj. As regards to the surrendering to the Lord, the King Parikshit Maharaj, why did he choose a particular single way of pleasing, like Shravana? Why did he not combine all the devotional processes? Is that something that he chose personally, and how we need to practice this with respect to mortals like us, who cannot go anywhere close to that stage where he's decided by just listening and standing in penance for so many days and time, he completely surrendered himself. So, similarly to the other great people who chose a particular single way of surrendering themselves. For us, we are trying to do all the processes. And are we getting confused?
Okay, so your question is, number one, why did Parikshit Maharaj choose to accept only one of the nine processes, that is hearing? Why not the others? And second, about us, why do we follow so many processes? Why not just select one? Alright? Okay, the answer to the first question is that Parikshit Maharaj didn't have time. He had only 7 days. In that 7 days, he had to be absolutely focused. So he had to hear, because that was the only thing he could do with complete focus at that point in time. Shukadev Goswami came and told him what was the perfection of life. What was the duty of a person who was about to die? So Parikshit Maharaj devoted himself completely to that one process and just heard. Right? As far as we are concerned, why don't we follow just one? Number one, because we can't. And we sit and do what Parikshit Maharaj did. 7 days consecutively, just non-stop hearing. No food, no drink, no sleep. Sitting in one place, hearing. Not possible. Even one lecture is hard enough. For 1.5 hours.
Similarly, worshiping. Can we just worship all the time? Very hard in this day and age for us to do any one thing for a long time. That's the first part of the answer. The second part is that the process for self-realization and attaining love of Godhead in this age is especially the chanting, congregational chanting of the names of the Lord. So that is our principal weapon or our technique for attaining love of God. At the same time, the acharyas like Srila Prabhupada and his predecessor acharyas, including Rupa Goswami, going all the way up to Mahaprabhu, have told us a balanced program of different types of limbs of bhakti so that they will help us to get stronger faith in the chanting of the holy names, to nourish our devotional kripa so that we can surrender more to the holy name and more to the process of hearing and chanting. So even though they are integral limbs of bhakti, worship of the deity and so on, but essentially they are supportive in nature. They are supportive to the principal activities of hearing and chanting. So in order, because we don't have the taste in hearing and chanting, so we need all these other activities to purify our hearts, to give us these spiritual devotional credits to be able to hear and chant, to enable us to have the taste, and so that our mind and senses and body and so on are engaged suitably at other times in Krishna conscious ways. All right? Yes. Yes, Radhika Nagar.
Maharaj, there is a tendency to see nowadays, particularly with the younger devotees, that they rather go and listen into their iPod or whatever to some devotee that they like, rather than going to the Bhagavatam class. And often the excuse is that the speaker is not qualified. So, I've seen it very often, they become very choosy, you know, about who is speaking and who's not. So, what would you say to these people?
Okay, so your question is that many times younger devotees today, older ones too, have a view that they're very picky or choosy about which speaker's talks they would attend. And if the speaker is not of their choice, they won't go there, they may just hear on the iPod or something else. So is that the right approach? Well, definitely one thing is clear, the more advanced in Krishna consciousness the speaker is, the more beneficial for the hearers. That's the fact. So we should try to hear from more and more advanced devotees. We should hear from the spiritual master. That's there. But that said, you may not have that opportunity all the time. So if there are sincere devotees who are repeating from Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, not concocting anything, speaking the right Siddhanta, the right conclusions, then one must physically hear. As I was mentioning yesterday, I gave the example of Jagannamastra. Of course, that doesn't mean that all the time we should go and hear lectures we can't understand. We should also hear, we must hear lectures we can understand. But that was an extreme example I was given to make a point. So we can sit and hear, we should make it a practice. Is purifying for us, is good for our spiritual development, and also by coming we are sending out a message, by not coming also we are sending out a message to the other devotees. So therefore it is important that we do make it a habit to come regularly to the association of devotees and hear. Otherwise, I have seen many times all over the movement, even though devotees are very enthusiastic to serve and do many other things, because they don't hear, they quarrel with others a lot. Yes? And they are very possessive, and they may, of things connected to Krishna. They won't let others do the service, it's my service, and very small-minded, instead of encouraging everybody, being large-hearted, big-hearted, and having everybody come into the fold and see that everyone can be pushed ahead, let's all go ahead.
let me help this devotee move ahead, let me help that devotee make the sacrifices to come ahead, come everyone included in the fold of the devotees. Yes, we must become big-hearted. Rather, we become small-hearted, just me and my work, my service, or we may not deal nicely with devotees. We may speak harshly to them, or we may not greet them with joy. When we are amongst devotees, we should greet each other cheerfully. We should have warm relationships with each other, loving, trusting relationships. It must be like one good family of devotees living together. So this mood, this attitude will be lost. Also, one may become proud of one's service. I'm doing this so nicely. Or one may think, this is my birthright to do this. Nobody else can do this. So all these things will come up. The psychology changes. Of course, one does get benefit by doing devotional service, even if it's a practical service, undoubtedly. But hearing is what will ensure that we do these things in the right consciousness, with the right attitude. Then our service will be sustainable. It will endure. Otherwise, there are chances that we may stop doing the service, or we may do it in the wrong way, or with the right spirit, wrong spirit. Right? So the habit of coming to the association of devotees physically and hearing is very important for us to cultivate. And this should be the culture amongst the devotee community. We should all come together. It's very serious business. We should see as far as possible that as many devotees as possible are facilitated to come to the association of devotees, to hear. And then we develop that broad-heartedness to include everybody and empower everybody to go ahead in Krishna's service. That is the mood in the spiritual world. Radharani is modest. She wants to encourage Lalita and Vishakadevi to go to Krishna. Lalita and Vishaka want Radharani to go to Krishna. Everybody is servant of the servant. Gopi Bhartaru Padakamadayur Dasa Dasa Anudasa. So when you hear properly, this is a change, a fundamental change that happens. You become much more Krishna conscious. And then you will have a wonderful community of devotees that's built up. If the foundation is strong, the building will be very strong. If the foundation is weak, the building will be weak and can collapse any time. So similarly, if the devotee community is built on the foundation of strong hearing and chanting, then all the other activities that go on in the community of devotees, which must go on, the preaching programs, the organization, the management, the cooking, the cleaning, the deity worship and the relationships between the devotees, all these things will automatically work out nicely. When you go to the root of the issue. Right? In many temples that we used to go, of course the pressures of administration and management are very strong in bigger temples. Even in small temples they are quite heavy. But in bigger temples you can imagine how heavy they are. And many times it's tempting for the leaders and the managers to skip the classes. Because, oh, you know, we have to do so many things. And after all, it's all for Krishna. Sometimes, yes, you may have to do if the service is so pressing, then you just have to give up the class and do what's necessary. But by and large, even the managers, the leaders, everybody should make it a point that everybody gathers together to hear. And it should also, as far as Grihastas are concerned, it should also be done at home. And all the members of the family should gather together at least once a day, have arati, have the kirtan, and read something from Srila Prabhupada's books, or tell a story or two. Something, some bona fide hearing must go on. The only time you can skip it is when you come to a program like this, where there is hearing and chanting. Right? Yes.
Is the result or effect of hearing truth from a liberated or unliberated person the same?
is the result of hearing from a liberated person the same or different from hearing from an unliberated person? Right? Well, as I mentioned, obviously, the more advanced the devotee, the more potent will be the katha, the talk, definitely, there's no doubt about that. So the more we would benefit by hearing. Now, definitely one should hear more from the advanced devotees. At the same time, that is not always available to us. And secondly, we should not be very judgmental also. Oh, this one is not an advanced devotee, so why should I hear from them? Then we end up trying to commit all sorts of offenses. So we should know both things. We must hear from the advanced devotees. The more advanced they are, the better they are. The better is the effect. At the same time, one must also know that we must give due respect. This system of hearing and chanting must continue in our local areas. We must hear what we can. Where possible, we should get personal association of the spiritual master, of advanced devotees, and hear from them personally. And where that is not possible, yes, we have our local areas. We should hear from speakers, wherever they are, because they are sincere, and they are repeating faithfully the words of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra.
So the result is the same, whether it's liberated or unliberated.
Well, as I said, obviously the result is more when you is greater when you hear from a more advanced devotee. That's quite clear. Mm-hmm. But you don't have that opportunity all the time. Also, one must realize it is also the attitude of the listener that also determines the effect. It's a two-way process. If the listener, even if the speaker is very, very elevated, but if the listener is not interested, if the listener is tuned off, then the effect will be not so much. But if the listener is very attentive and is lapping up every word that's being spoken, the effect will be more. So even if the speaker is not that advanced, and that's, but you're hearing very attentively, very faithfully, because it's Krishna's sound vibration, definitely the effect is more. Right? So is that clear?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
We also have to develop bridges, so we got to give room to people to encourage people to come and preach.
That's right.
And they, unless they have a forgiving audience, and the
forgiving audience.
How will they develop? How will our preaching practices develop if we are not given a chance
to preach? So, and it's our duty to speak also. Where there is Shravanam, there must be Kirtan. So while it is good for us to want to hear from very, very fast devotees, but we should also hear from other devotees. And also we shouldn't start getting too much into the judgmental mood of, you know, this one is advanced to that one. Maybe this one is not advanced in that way. So there is the risk that we might get into all these sort of things. Right? So let us not get too much into that. Let's just hear from the right sources, from disciplic succession. And then different devotees get the inspiration and opportunity to speak. And yes, they speak. And we do it. Right? Yes, Jagannath.
This was brought up in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada. But some of the devotees were going outside. And Prabhupada said they shouldn't do that. He said if they don't like the speaker, they don't think the speaker is elevated, they still should not go outside. They should speak.
Yes.
They should give the class. If they don't like the speaker, then they should give a class. Unless he and them speak. But don't go outside. He said
that. Yes. That was a conversation he had in Vrindavan about a particular devotee who wrote to him, actually wrote a letter to him, saying that, I don't think the devotees in the temple are advanced enough for me to hear. So Prabhupada wrote and said, whatever it may be, but don't go out. And if you think that they are not advanced enough for you, you speak. Of course, if he speaks, then it remains to be seen what others will think about his announcement. And whether they will attend or not. So therefore, devotees are basically humble. So we attend. We don't become judgmental. We attend classes. And we get purified. Yes. Any other question? Last question. Yes, Radhikana.
The Bhagavatam says that by regular attendance to the classes of Bhagavatam and its service to the pure devotee, almost everything that is inauspicious within the heart becomes destroyed.
Destroyed.
Of course, we understand that that verse is referring to the level of steadiness, you know, after
Nishtha.
And we see that in subsequent verses that you can reach to higher levels of in bhakti. Yet it seems to indicate that there is something else needed. Just not only this, just by hearing, almost everything is destroyed. It seems that there is something else needed to be able to destroy completely the anarthas in the heart. According to Puja, just look at that verse.
You have to see this in the context of the stage at which it is spoken. Your question is that Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nitya Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhakti Bhavati Naishtiki. So Naishtiki Bhakti comes by one who regularly attends classes of the Bhagavata. And it says that Prayeshu means almost, Abhadreshu Nashta. So, all the auspicious in the heart is almost completely destroyed. It doesn't say completely destroyed. Almost completely destroyed. What does it mean? Because this verse is especially spoken for those who have begun, who are doing bhajana kriya, who are in the process of just starting their devotional service, coming to be associated with devotees, and they have started. So when they start, then by doing that regularly, very quickly, they will come to the stage when they are almost purified. But then what happens? They continue hearing from the stage of Nishtha. As they continue hearing, then gradually, bit by bit, all the other unwanted things in the heart also start disappearing. So there is nothing new that needs to be done. The same process continues. So this reference, it doesn't mean that by hearing Bhagavatam, only something will be destroyed and something will be left, and that something else can be destroyed by something else other than hearing. No. It's the same hearing that should continue. But as it goes on, our taste increases. And as the taste increases, the further the purification that happens. And it goes on like that. But the Prayeshu Padrish is here because of the context. It's spoken in the context of the verses. For a person who is contaminated and who is come into the process of devotional service through the association of devotees. So this is the first thing that happens. But then it continues, and then the perfection takes place.
In the later verse it says that.
Sorry?
In a few verses more it will say, irrevocable loving service will be established.
That's right, yes. The whole series of verses you have to see one after the other.
Yeah. It leads to prema bhakti.
Yes, that's right. So in the subsequent verses you will find that the process has to continue. And even after reaching prema bhakti, hearing also goes on. In the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan, it's going on. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanande.